A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Absolutely emphatic.
And Jay DeMeritt. Oh, yes. Luther Blissett. That's a spectacular goal.
And Helgeson comes in first. Oh, it's a goal.
And a goal. Sensational. And it's there. Again, would you believe it?
Hello and welcome back to the What for Buzz podcast. And we're now six games without defeat, all while going into the dreaded international break and 5-0 victory to talk about as well. My name is Matt Messiano and I'm joined, as usual, by Jordan Weimer and Tom Burdell. My goodness, guys. I'm sure you're both very well, because it's not often that we get to talk about such a large victory.
No, especially before an international break too. It's not really our forte, is it? So, something different to talk about. We don't really know each week going into these games what we're going to end up having to discuss. There's the train, nice and early off the bat. Got the train noise in.
Excellent.
Yeah, good. Yeah, this is a...
It was specifically requested this week, by the way.
We did try and time the podcast to start in line with the train coming past. So that's first off to a good start.
Good. But yeah, well, Tom, what did you think of the 5-0 victory?
I was in Prague watching Bohemians, so I watched it back this afternoon on my day off. Funny game.
Big Bohemians fan.
Yeah. Funny game. I don't think we were that good, which I know isn't what people want to hear. Clearly it was an improvement on Huddersfield, in that we didn't play 100 passes between our two centre-halves and we scored some goals and had some goal threat. But I kind of felt like we scored our presentable chances, didn't do a lot else at the right during the rest of the game, kept Rotherham at arm's length just about, but they're a very poor side, clearly. And that was kind of it. And, you know, tacked a couple of goals on at the end to make a comfortable win look like an outstanding win, which I don't really think it was. I don't want to be negative. You know, can't be too negative when you win 5-0, particularly the season we're having so far. But I just want to temper my own expectations as much as anything.
Take note, Vlad. Sorry. It's six goals that you need to make Tom.
Yeah, it's a very high watermark you have to pass.
I think what you alluded to there, Tom, was that, you know, we put away our presentable opportunities. But I think one of the big things about this game is that we actually created presentable opportunities. Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as Tom said, you know, Rotherham were not great. I think arguably the worst side we've seen at Vicarage Road this season. I think they're worse than QPR probably in some ways. But, you know, we've also been in that situation numerous times over the years, and we've not capitalized, and we've lost or drawn those games in frustrating manner. So yeah, you know, it was more positive in quite a few ways. We had a lot more threat in the game consistently, as you mentioned there, Matt. We were able to make some chances, especially down that left hand side. Kind of everything really went through that left. A kind of link up of Hu and Kone and Lewis and Sema really kind of gave us something there, and we were able to continue just driving it down that side of the pitch without any real opposition. You know, they didn't really do much to adapt to it and try and stop us. So we just kept going with it. And, you know, sometimes these opportunities present yourself and you've got to kind of make the most of it. And I think we did do that.
So where did this win come from then, Tom?
I think we were playing a side that was just in a very bad, tempting to say very bad moment, but has been in a very bad moment away from home for a long time. 21 away games without a win. They've only taken 1 point from 8 away games this season. And they're near the bottom of the league, and Matt Taylor's been sacked off the back of it. They offered next to nothing. It was two shots that Ben Hamer faced, and he saved them both. To be honest with you, I'm struggling to even remember what they were. There was the free kick from distance, and was there a header possibly? They were a very limited side, very passive out of possession, I think, which you saw in the Kiembe goal, where Porteous, of all people, is sort of able to drive to within kind of 20 yards of the box and slide it into Kiembe to score. You know, they just didn't offer an awful lot. I don't, you know, look, you can only beat what's put in front of you, right? So I don't want to be too Debbie Downer about it or seem like I'm being deliberately kind of, you know, what's the word I'm thinking of? Like opposite, contrary. I don't want to seem like I'm being...
Contrary.
Yeah, that's it. I don't want to seem like I'm being like that, because at the end of the day, 1-5-0, and as you say, Matt, if we created chances and we put them away, then you can't be too down on it. But I just felt like, yeah, they were probably worse than QPR, really, which seems like a pretty low bar. So there were positives still, I think, as Jordan said, kind of down that left hand side, what have you. We looked to be trying to work the ball down the side, down the channels. Thought the fullbacks played well and kind of underlapped and got into dangerous areas and were more, had more intent and more kind of more progression in how they use the ball than we've seen. But yeah, I just, you know, if we talk, if it's a seeding system, then Rotherham didn't get seeded.
Nice one.
But just in regards to that kind of feeling, and I don't want us to come into this in a too negative manner, because I'm sure a lot of people, you know, had a 5-0 win and kind of feeling positive going into a podcast and want to listen to us, you know, talk about a victory and so on. So we won't be over negative. There are positives to talk about, and we will do. I think maybe with the kind of the feeling that you're feeling right now, Tom, I think probably quite a few people are the same. It felt like one of those victories we've had over the last couple of years we've had in the Championship, where it feels like this: the team of better players beat the team of worse players. It doesn't feel like you maybe were seeing that kind of progression that we were hoping in terms of, oh, this is a massive improvement from the week before in terms of our approach and the way we executed it. Felt, although it was in some ways, but it had that feeling of we dominated them with quality in at certain points of the game. You know, Ken Semmer on the left, and even the movement and finishing from Rajovic as well. But it wasn't necessarily totally dominant in a sense of, you know, we've approached this game in a way to, you know, break down Rotherham and how they play. It really just did feel like a poor team against a better team. And maybe that goes some way to feeling like it's not as satisfying as of a 5-0 win. But, you know, on the other hand, if we are going to make some progression, then you have to start somewhere, and, you know, having that momentum is obviously not a bad thing. And although we didn't really think of the unbeaten run as being that much of a positive after a couple of less than satisfactory draws or satisfying draws, I think looking at the table now and looking at our kind of past five games, seeing three wins and two draws feels pretty good going into the break.
Ahead of the game, five changes, which was a bit surprising. But the biggest surprise was the fact that Dan Backman had been left out and replaced by Ben Hamer. What do we know about this, and how do we think Ben Hamer did in the circumstances?
Yeah, so they put out at the time, and this is one of the things I will give the club a bit of credit, and I'll be positive about something. Bloody hell, will miracles never cease? They've been quite good about communicating why players have missed out this season, I think, which hasn't always been the case.
True.
We've kind of laughed, and I've laughed quite a few times at the amount, you know, player goes in for a stub toe and ends up spending the amount of time out that you'd think it was a far more serious injury. They communicated that he had a concussion in training this week and was therefore kind of bound by concussion protocols, which I think we can all agree is a good thing. I actually think it's a good thing on kind of several levels, in that he's not been a particularly popular figure for a while, particularly this season. It's no harm to us to see somebody else, therefore, in goal, but particularly against a limited opponent, you know, that you're not kind of massively weakening yourself. It's a very different case having your second choice goalkeeper in goal for Rotherham at home than it is Leicester away, which is obviously the next game. So I think the timing of this is quite good as well for Dan Backman, that he will presumably, unless there are any kind of issues, be out of the concussion protocol for that trip to the league leaders on November 25th. So that's something. In terms of actually judging his performance, I think it's hard to say, you know, anything good or bad, to be honest with you. You know, the two things he had to deal with, he dealt with. There was one kind of cross at the near post in the second half, which he sort of flapped at a bit and let through his fingers. And I think one of ours scrambled it away, headed it away. There was one good bit where he kind of came off his line very quickly, chested the ball away under a bit of pressure, took it out to the left touchline and cleared it away, which I suspect had Daniel Backman done, people would have been having kittens in the stand. So that was quite calm. But I've heard a few people say, I thought he was really good in possession. I thought he was really progressive and calm and just really good with his passing. And I thought he was fine. He didn't do anything wrong. I didn't see something there that made me think, oh God, yeah, wow, Daniel, Ben Hamer with the ball at his feet, what a, you know, outstanding passer of the ball. Completed 20 of 25 passes, none of his five long passes, and only three forward passes in the game. Having watched it and then checked the numbers afterwards to try and not kind of prejudice myself, I don't think that there was anything there that kind of stood out. He just did the required job. Don't know about you, Jordan, but that was my kind of view on the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was a huge improvement. I mean, it's not a great game to judge the goalkeeper, obviously, but if you're going to look at him, it's probably, as you say, going to be based on kind of how he used the ball, how he moved it around.
Exactly.
But we weren't really doing anything that expansive in terms of building up from the back. I think we've kind of drawn back on that a little bit with Backman in goal too. We're not really starting every attack the same as we did previously, where we're, you know, splitting those centre-backs and dropping that six in to pick up the ball and playing from there. We are being a little bit more kind of conservative, a little bit more traditional with our build-up from those positions. And I think, you know, Hamer's fine. I think he's a decent backup, but I don't think too many really feel that he's the answer in terms of, you know, getting Backman out there. I think the reality of the situation is Backman is our number one goalkeeper this year, and there's not going to be much aside from injury that's going to change that. And I think it seems pretty evident based on kind of the opinion of the coach and also the deal that he's been given. So, you know, it's good that we can see Hamer is able to deputise, and I think that's pretty much what we expected.
Yeah, and it's good that he's been able to put in a decent performance, because his first showing for us, which was last season now, wasn't it, wasn't a great one. So it's always nice for a goalkeeper to get a clean sheet under your belt and just to, you know, dust off some of the cobwebs and prove to yourself that you still definitely have the ability to go out there against the likes of Rotherham and put in a decent performance.
They did his job. He's there for that exact reason, and he performed, you know, well in the circumstances. And yeah, credit to him. That's what you want your backup goalkeeper to do. So yeah, pleased with that.
To be fair, I think almost the best thing you can say about a goalkeeper 9 times out of 10 is that you don't need to, a bit like a referee, yeah, you don't notice them in a way. And yeah, I probably wouldn't have noticed Ben Hamer, mainly because he was never in shot. But no.
Yeah,
solid stuff. And as you say, Jordan, it's almost, although it needs to be touched upon, it's almost a moot point. I don't think there needs to be any discussion about him replacing Backman, because it's clearly the case that the faith is with him from within the club. So it's nice to know he's able to do a job if called upon.
Incidentally, as we're on goalkeepers, Watford put out a decent video on their YouTube channel the other day, which was sort of like a behind the scenes of how the goalkeepers train, and I found that really interesting. So give that a watch if you haven't seen it, and tell us what you think about it, because I thought it was quite insightful. Anyway, another one of the changes was Mileta Rajovic in for Rakun Bayo up front. And I think it's probably a good idea to have a little closer look at Rajovic in a little more detail. Two goals to his name. I mean, two of probably the easiest goals he'll ever score. But I think that's the type of goals that he's expected to score, isn't it? That's sort of his bread and butter. But did we see any adaptation from Watford in their build-up to suit his game?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely crossing the ball to him. We weren't playing it to his feet. And you know, you say there are two finishes, and I think, you know, I think we've come to expect him to finish those chances, but we've had plenty of strikers over the years that miss them. They're not easy finishes in a sense. And the first one he puts away really tidily, and even the second one, he doesn't take the easy option in terms of placement. He does go high into the back of the net, and it makes it tough for the goalkeepers. So they are smart, considered finishes. I'll give him that. And in terms of the build-up, yeah, you know, we saw and we discussed that left-hand side being a real threat. We kind of cut out the middle of the park quite a lot and just really just pushed and pushed down that side. And, you know, you can look at the first goal and just to kind of go back a second to what we were saying a second ago about Rotherham, there's three players that are in potential position to close down Ken Semmer, and none of them do so. They all give him, you know, 10 yards of space. It's kind of unbelievable when you watch it back. But we were able to be successful from it. And, you know, it takes Semmer having the precision with that cross. And it, you know, it finds Vasevic really well. And he does great to finish and get into the right position. So, you know, credit to him. Obviously, the other side of his game, the build-up and interplay, it's relatively non-existent, isn't it? There's not much there. If you're okay with playing with that sort of striker and we can, you know, find a way to do so and be effective, then it's not a problem. It's just not necessarily the kind of interplay in forward positions we might have expected with maybe some other personnel there. Mm.
Tom, you ask anybody, Matheus Martins or Ken Semmer, who's the better footballer? And I think 99% of people say Matheus Martins, but I believe, maybe it's just myself and a few select others, but I believe if Martins had started that game instead of Semmer, Watford wouldn't have won 5-0.
I think you're spot on there, mate, actually, yeah, because the goals came from Ken being Ken, didn't they? And we all know that Matheus Martins, despite being right-footed, thrives on the left because he loves coming inside, basically, doesn't he, and shooting, and essentially, in a less spectacular way than usual, he scored his goal by doing that. Whereas Ken Semmer is that kind of old school winger, isn't he, who gets to the byline and puts in crosses. We had a question from Django Zim on Twitter asking who should start on the right wing. For him, Ken has to play on the left, but right wing's tough. And I think there's definitely something in that. We've got a few players that kind of offer different things, or a couple of players that offer different things on the left in Ken and Martins. But on the right-hand side, no one has quite made that spot their own yet this season, have they? Tom Ince obviously came off the bench and scored. Asprey, I thought, had one of his more disappointing games, and he's started the last three in a row now, which kind of caught me by surprise when I checked it. And I wonder if that's a position that we might look at in January. I suspect it probably isn't, because we've got Tom Ince as well, and he's obviously a senior player, but no one has really nailed that position. But Django's question was, who would we start on the right? I wonder what either of you two think about that. Who would be your preference?
Yeah. My preference would be Martins, but only if you instruct him to act more in the same way to Semmer. What I mean by that is getting your head down, driving down to the line and then crossing it in, which isn't really his game, but I think he'd probably be better suited to that than Asprey would be, just because he seems like he might be able to adapt to it.
Can Martins do it, essentially, was Django's question, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, we just as well, we've talked about before, you know, is Ismail able to adapt? And I think even just the fact that he's playing Ken Semmer on the left is an adaptation in itself, you know, trying to find a way to make Vasevic more effective and get the best out of Ken. Because we've seen Ken on the right-hand side under Bilic, and also, you know, a few managers have tried it, but under Bilic kind of most recently, and then again under Ismail. And the difference, I will say, is Bilic never really did decide to move away from that, and at least Ismail has, because Ken just doesn't really operate. He needs that. He looks much more comfortable in that lane, knowing he's got the touchline on his outside and playing off in that space. That's where he's comfortable. That's where he can beat his man. He can be powerful. He can be strong. He's got that good delivery. If he gets to the byline or even beforehand, you can trust that left foot to put a decent ball into the box. We've seen that quality there, and that's obviously very effective. It does leave you with that problem, because I think Martins is really, you know, one of, if not our best match winner. And so much of that threat comes from him getting shots on goal. You know, he's, I have to look off the top of my head, I think he does lead us for shots this season so far. You know, he's not afraid to get to the edge of the box, cut in that right foot, get a shot away. There are times for sure you want to put the ball in the box a little bit earlier, but you'll take that for what you get back from him, especially as well when we're stretched and we're counter-attacking. You know, we talk about those strikers, they're not really heavily involved in the build-up and not particularly carriers of the ball. they are there to finish chances off. You need someone like Martins who can take that run, but not just look for someone else, but at times be in a position to take a shot on goal and, you know, play in that inverted way. And that's obviously what we like to do under Ismail, especially when you look at the right-hand side, the players we're talking about in that position. We're talking about Asprilla, we're talking about Ince, you know, players that can do both of those things. And I think the right for me, I think it's just a position that I'd be looking to change very quick. You know, whoever starts, you've got a half, you've got 50, 60 minutes, but that change is going to happen. If you're not performing, then we need to change quick because we've got depth in there. And you know, if it means Tom Ince coming in, we see what he can do as well. You know, cool and calm in the finish and experience. Obviously, not the goal didn't come from that position, but he's an option there. And
was he on the left for that goal?
I'm thinking of the goal from memory now. He shot from the left, didn't he? But it's
notionally his position was the right though, wasn't it? Because Chak Vatadze was on the left.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he kind of scored it from the left side of the box.
He drifted across. But the point being, we have so many options there. I don't think you have to be tied to keep them on for too long. And you know, there's been criticism of subs, obviously. But you know, we talked about Yasser Asprilla there. He struggles to get into games at times, and I think at least you've got options. So I think it's really just kind of a right wing by committee situation. Let's just see who's performing and play him and get him in there. And if they're not, then they've got options to change. I don't think we have to be too tied to a specific option there. Martins could do it, but for me, you know, I understand maybe you want to get your best players on the pitch. You might say just start Martins on the right and Semra on the left, but I do like Martins from that left-hand side. If we're playing Rashevich, though, and we feel that the delivery into the box is the most important thing, then we're going to see that from Ken. But I don't necessarily see Martins' game changing too much if he plays on the right in the sense that he'll be trying to drive at the box and get shots away. I just think that's what he's good at.
Ken won the Man of the Match poll. Has he sort of earned the most important player, the MVP of that first 11 at the minute?
He definitely seems to be at a point where his stock is as high as it's ever been among Watford fans, doesn't he? Which I think is a combination of his off-field stuff, the interview he obviously did previously, the fact that he just seems like a good guy who really enjoys being here, and then the kind of intangibles like his teamwork and work rate, and things like that. The fact that he just, for want of a better way of framing it, just gets it. But I think you can't overlook his football ability either, and it does him a disservice if you do, because he is a really solid Championship player. I think, you know, no one would, or you'd be hard-pushed to find anyone who disagreed that he's a little bit pushed to say he's a Premier League kind of quality contributor. But at this level, he's really, really effective at what he does. And I think the variety of having him going down the outside and getting a cross in and allowing Jamal Lewis to underlap him, and then on the other side you've got, as we said, Asprilla or Ince, who want to come in on their left hand foot, Jesus wept, on their left foot, and then allow Ryan Andrews to get round them on the outside with his pace. You know, there's variety to the way we attack, or can be variety to the way we attack. But yeah, at the moment, the way he's playing, Ken Semmer would be pretty much the first name on the team sheet for me. One of the other questions we had in was from Simon at Simon Watford FC, who said, could we compare how many crosses we put in when we have the wingers playing on their correct side as opposed to when they have to cut back? I looked up the last 10 games just for my, 10 games prior to this weekend and then this weekend. So 11 games total, just for my own curiosity. I'm not going to read out all the numbers. I'll stick it out on Twitter. But essentially, as far as I can see, in those 10 games, we haven't had a righty on the right and a lefty on the left. We've had a combination of both being on the wrong side. But in the last three, it has been Asprilla on the right and Asemra on the left. And actually, against Rotherham, it was probably one of the games where we put in fewer crosses than you might think compared to some games. Millwall and Middlesbrough were the high points, both in the 20s. But our completion, our accuracy, was a lot higher than most games. 41.67, so nearly 41.2%. The highest since West Brom at home, which was 56%. So I don't know if that necessarily, I'll put it out as a saying in totality, I don't know if that necessarily there is something in it or not, but I certainly think that he's found a combination in Semmer on the left and someone on the right that he's a fan of, Ismail, that is.
Is Rajovic important in that as well, or could it be Bayo? Would Bayo have scored those goals just as Rajovic did, or does Rajovic have something different in that mould?
I mean, I think Bayo maybe would be in a... like, he's good at finding the position, he's good at getting into that space. I don't think he's as instinctual as a finisher. I think it's... I'm not sure I would have fancied him to put both of those chances away, to be honest with you. But, you know, I think he does offer more in other areas as well. So it's kind of really, you know, it's dependent on those aspects. Now, do you think he can finish those chances, or is he able to offer you something in the pressing sense? You know, I think Rajovic is, he's a little stiff. He can press a little bit, but he doesn't put the same pressure on defensive lines that Bayo's able to. I just think they're different in that sense, but we're in an awkward situation with strikers. Although we obviously did get a little bit of a cameo for the rarely seen Rhys Healy as well. So I'm sure we'll get into that soon too.
Oh yes. Well, shall we talk about it now as we're talking about the strikers, and then shall we come up with who we think should be involved for Leicester, which is a very different game to Rob.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how get 30, how get 20, 20, 20, how get 20, 20, how get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yes, let's do that.
Healy, then. We got to see a bit more of him today. Not today, sorry. We got to see a bit more of him on Saturday. Felt as though he probably could have scored as well, but in the end, he did get an assist, which was good. But did we see a bit more of what he can offer to the team today on Saturday?
Go on, Jordan.
Yeah, I think he got on. He looked super keen to get a shot away, and it kind of just was a little bit too rushed, a little bit too hurried, and it just didn't quite fall in the right way. But, you know, credit to him, he did come across the box and just lay it off to, well, that was to Ince, wasn't it, in that situation?
To Martins.
Yeah, apologies to Martins, who was able to make the most of it. So that was, you know, that was good to see, and he looked lively. I think he is someone that can contribute. We just need to see him given the minutes. The thing is now in regards to the Leicester game, you know, looking forward, I think in my opinion, I'd be really valuing that pressing ability off Bayo, you know, being able to really close things down and maybe force Leicester into being a little bit quicker out of the back. You know, you're expecting this to be a game we're going to have to be a bit more counter-attacking, less dominant in possession. So you might value that role even more. But it's hard to see Rajovic being dropped after, you know, his recent goal record, isn't it?
Well, and I mean, an experienced manager, which you hope Ismail is, would make the right decision for the game and not play the player that has just scored the goals. But
yeah, but it's nuanced, isn't it? Because, you know, do you want to what effect does that have to the rest of the team, to Rajovic? You know, like, what? It's not an easy decision. Even if it,
but shouldn't the players respect that as well? They know Leicester is different to Rotherham.
Yeah, but you know, there's a certain currency that comes with playing well. You know,
it doesn't send a good message, does it, to drop a guy who's just scored two, even if he's not the right fit you, from a human level.
But that's the right decision, though, isn't it?
But I'm sure Milita Rajovic would disagree. Yeah. I'm sure he'd say he can do that job, and you know, maybe. Maybe Kashar signed different. It's a tough one. I know what you're saying. You know, it's up to the manager ultimately, and if he thinks the decision's fit, you know, it's his decision. But you know, dropping a striker that's scoring goals is tough. But you know, my personal opinion is I think Bayer would offer you something there. But then again, you know, there's also the counter argument as, you know, okay, we might be limited on chances. Don't you want Rajovic in there who could, you know, tuck one away? So it's tough.
Well, do you think we can go to Leicester and play in the same way that we did against Rotherham?
I think
like the same.
I would expect
tactics,
us to no, because
plan.
We were able to dominate the ball and really control those wide areas. I don't expect us to be able to do so in the same manner. It's going to be much more. I would expect it to be much more counter-attacking. You know, less possession, more disruptive in midfield, and try and win that ball back high up. You know, that's when we talk about the counter-attacking ability of the likes of Martins. That becomes very valuable to you because you don't have that more controlled, precise build-up that leads you to get Ken Semmer on the ball and whip that cross in. That time and space is likely not to be as available. And, you know, you're playing with a... I'm expecting this one to be more about the pace and the forward position too. You know, is Rajovic able to get on the end of some of those balls, which has often been a problem in kind of counter-attacking situations when he's played? He's not really got the mobility to get ahead of that defender, and oftentimes he's getting caught up and so on. Maybe you see a little bit more in bio there, but I don't think it'll be similar. I think it should be quite opposite in terms of what we saw against Rotherham.
Okay, fair enough. Someone who may stay in, who has been in of late and has been doing a very decent job, is Jake Livermore, Tom.
Yeah, Jake Livermore, eh? I mean, incredible that a bloke who's basically on death's door wouldn't have been given a professional contract by any club in the world and was out of breath running onto a football pitch has turned into our most important player. It's almost like he was perfectly adequate championship footballer last season, and the fact that he's 33 means he shouldn't just be written off automatically. He has started 7 games this season. 6 of them have been in this run. We are unbeaten in this run. I'm not saying that those stats are obviously, you know, leading. I always think they flash them up on Sky or you mention them in commentary regularly, don't they? And I just think it's a bit anomalous, really, or a bit disingenuous to say it. Like the one all those years ago about Gareth Bale never playing in a win for Spurs. You know, it's just crap, really. But I think you have to look at the fact that we've been more solid in the majority of those games than we have been. He has a really good ability to just stick a toe in or stick a shoulder in sometimes and nudge someone off the ball and just do the fairly unglamorous stuff that does get kind of overlooked quite often. I also think, and I think I've said this before, I've been kind of taken by surprise by how quickly he moves the ball at times. He's quite quick and incisive with his passing. It may not be that he pings a, you know, or threads a through ball through or pings one into one of the wingers or something, but he just keeps it moving quickly rather than slowing us down. So when we get the ball back in that situation, we're in a position where we can kind of threaten in the transition. So he's been good. I don't think it's a complete anomaly that he is that we have been picking up a few more results while he has been in the team. And on Saturday, I did pull up his stats earlier, but now I've absolutely typically lost the tab that they're on. So you're just going to have to believe me when I say that he came out well statistically in the game.
Jordan, what's your opinion of Livermore been?
Yeah, he's been steady. You know, he keeps it relatively simple in possession. You know, he doesn't quite have the same license in terms of looking to pick up the ball and moving across that center of the pitch to get involved in the build up as much as Siriato did. He's much more of a defensive player in that position. Doesn't play with quite the same tempo, but he gives you some grounding in midfield. You know, he's able to maintain that position and allows you to play off him when needed. But so that solidity defensively is really important for us, especially when we are committing further forwards a little bit with the fullbacks. He's been good. You know, he's he's got limitations, obviously, but I think we've adapted the role and it's worked for us in a broader sense, because it has given us some more support in an area that we were starting to look a little bit exposed from. So yeah, no, really good from him. And obviously in the ideal world, it would be a slightly different profile of player and we'd have some more longevity there. But in the immediate, in the short term, you can't really do much more than he's done for us.
Am I right in saying that it was Hoot on the pitch that was the captain against Rotherham? Is that right? In the wake of Backman?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Wondering what you think about that decision. Did it matter much to you? Or
no, not to me personally.
I was expecting it to go to Livermore personally, but
I think Livermore, I mean, look, Hoot's on the pitch, he's probably our starting left centre back as long as he's fit, right? I think, you know, Livermore is going to do what he does regardless. I think giving him the armband isn't going to change too much there. So, you know, if we feel we get some extra value out of Hoot there and giving him that responsibility, perhaps, I mean, Hoot can be a little bit petulant at times. If it stops him doing that somewhat, then I'm for it. No concern with me for Livermore being on the pitch without the armband.
I think it's one where it's probably a case of tenure, isn't it? That given the nod to Hoot over Livermore. But I think, as I said at the time, just, you know, the main thing for me is let's have lots of leaders. Doesn't need to strictly have the armband to be a captain figure.
No, okay. Alongside him was Ede Kiyembe, who also has been putting in some decent performances of late in his newer position and scored a first goal for Watford in what we've been waiting for it for a long time, but it came along and it was a very nice one. A good assist from Portis as well in the build-up. What did you think of Kiyembe's performance against Rotherham?
Yeah, we're starting to see more of that that offensively minded player, aren't we? You know, he is, his position before joining us was in that more advanced role, and he just looks more comfortable there. We talked, you know, a lot at length about his ability to play in that deeper number six position. He just doesn't really have the speed in possession. Often takes a few too many touches, but he looks much more comfortable advanced. You know, he's quicker to move the ball. He seems more aware of his surroundings and just, again, more comfortable in that position. And we're starting to see it come through a little bit more. He does offer you that physicality and that ability to kind of be disruptive and win that ball back too. But he just looks a lot smoother there. And, you know, the left foot's not a bad option too to have in that position as well. And yeah, I mean, look, he's keeping some good players out of the team. So I'm pleased that he's doing well and he's really kind of nailing down that spot at the moment.
Yeah, Tom, Kiyembe.
Yeah, really. And again, another one that kind of started the season out of the team and you thought would kind of struggle to get back in based on last season, certainly on his kind of availability last season. He was one of those ones that went in for a little bit off the sides
mystery calf.
Yeah, came out scalped, but he's been really, really good. He's now categorised on by Opta as an attacking midfielder, which I think says something. But at the weekend, he was a kind of a force in both senses again. No one had more touches in the opposing box. No one attempted more shots. And yet he was all third for passes received as well, showing how kind of we played through him, but also completed 9 of 13 defensive actions, 3 interceptions, 1 more loose ball duels, trying to say that quickly, than anyone. I think he's developing into, or finally been allowed to flourish as, the player that the club thought they were buying a couple of seasons back now. You know, quite clearly wouldn't have scored that goal before this kind of change to a role with the kind of attacking freedom. So long may it continue, because at the moment I think that three in midfield I like the look of. I hadn't put him in here, but I'd meant to. Just Ismail Kone, I thought, was kind of a force for positive again, but I also thought was a little bit sloppy in possession at times, or a little bit overzealous. I wondered what you guys thought, as in, I don't want to say he played really well under certain, don't want to say he played badly. I just thought there were some bits he could clean up and it would have been a really good performance. But I feel like we're seeing an improvement and more of what he's about week on week at the moment.
Yeah, this Ismail Kone is much more what we saw in the MLS in terms of his ability to carry the ball. you know, quite rangy in his movement. He can drift, bring the ball across midfield or from deep and just carry you forward quite quickly, quite confident when he's in his stride. But the passing, you know, he got away with it a little bit more time, a little bit more freedom, and he almost played more advanced in the MLS. But we're seeing more of that now, whereas before, when he was a little bit more conservative in possession, or conservative when, not in terms of how he's using the possession, but conservative when he has the ball at his feet, he might just lay it off a little quicker. We didn't really get to see him carry it the same. He could look quite a limited player, because I think he was avoiding what he's actually best at for the most part. So yeah, as he's kind of grown into it, he's looked more and more comfortable. I think he's improved kind of as the season's gone on in a lot of ways. This was definitely one of his better performances for me. And as you say, not massively influential in large parts of the game, but when he did have the ball, I thought he was able to bring us forward quite well, and he also covered defensively quite nicely too. So I think he's, again, there's a reason why he's playing and keeping the likes of Dede Bashiru and Imran Luzer at the team right now. He's done a good job, and I think next to Kayembe, they make quite a good unique pairing. And I'm sure there's other factors at play.
Should Luzer be worried?
Just playing ability and form. There's probably something else going on, I'd imagine, but you know, he's. It's not like we're getting really bad performances at number eight and Luzer's being left on the bench and people are complaining about it. No one's really mentioning him in a sense of, you know, he should be starting right now, because the level of performance has been pretty good. So yeah, he should be a little bit concerned about that starting place, because it's definitely getting further and further away.
At Watford underscore Douglas asked about Luzer, just kind of said frustrating that we're not getting a tune out of him, and was on his day, he's probably one of our best three players. Could he be off in January? I don't think that's likely, because I think he leaves when we can get his full kind of value potential, right? He's young enough, presumably, that they see him as someone who could kind of make a few quid on.
His contract must be at least a couple years in there now, or something like that.
He signed a new one last year. He's got about 4 years left, I think. Yeah, so he's, I think, no, I think you're right. I don't, as far as I know, there'd be no option for him to leave unless we got a massive offer, which I don't really see materialising. I'm not, you know, potentially if he's really disrupted, he might be pushing his agent to kind of source him something and see if they can get some disruption going and get a move done. But I think it's unlikely. They want to, as you say, they're going to want to maximise their asset there, the sale of their asset. If they do move on from him, I don't think that he's irredeemable and there's no route back from him into the team. But I think the money is the most important thing there. I don't think we'll be optimising that if we were to sell him in January, most likely. I don't think he's quite the player that would demand that inflated price in January because of his performance. So it's not a great time to sell an out-of-form player. How would you feel if we were to get rid of him in January? And would you expect a replacement needed, or would you be disappointed that he's gone, or like would it be a big blow to the team?
It wouldn't be a big blow to the team as it is, but an in-form Luzer is one of the Championship's best players, isn't he? So it's just a shame that he's not really showing that for us. I wonder if the money could be better spent on other areas of the team that...
Don't think we'd spend it though, would we?
No, that's the thing. We wouldn't, would we? No, so it doesn't really matter.
He is a frustrating one though. You know, if you're looking on paper and you're looking at putting this team together, you're thinking, oh, Imran Luzer's got to be starting every game. As you say, this is a top tier Championship midfielder. You know, it's odd to be so comfortable with us, with him being out of our team. You know, from a fan perspective, we are, I mean, somewhat okay with it, but there is that underlying level of irritation that we're not maximising, again, an asset which could be making this team even better than what we saw on Saturday. You know, as high as the level of performance from Kembe was, and, you know, Kone's contribution, if you put Imran Luzer in that team playing well, that's, you know, he's improving your chances of scoring even more and winning even more convincingly. So it is a tough one to manage.
How do you get the best from Imran Luzer in this team?
I think that's one we discussed, wasn't it, last week? But it's, you know, it's, you want to be playing through him. I think he likes to play more advanced, and he seems to have been adapting to that as time went on. You know, we don't really play with the traditional deeper players, that he can play in a more deeper role and press on and push forward, be aggressive off the ball and be a bit of a nuisance too. But you want him to get in a position where he's able to bring others into play. And I think that forward area, that number eight position, would be useful for him, especially if he can, you know, really get the most of that out of that left foot. Potentially now, if we're looking at playing Rajovic in that striking position, I'd be thinking, okay, is Imran Luzer an option to put in that left number eight role and maybe give you some of that ability to get the ball into that area that Ken Sema can do, but you can still maybe couple him with a Martins coming inside and getting shots away. Maybe that's a way to solve it. I think that would be a good option for us in regards to Luzer. But you know, we'll see if there's any room for that or not.
Tom, did we have any other questions that we haven't had a chance to get to yet?
Yes, mate. Couple more that we didn't kind of cover in the course. One we should have, and my fault for not bringing it up. Matt, as in the first half of Watford, Rajovic's increasing technical ability. I believe there was at least two successful layoffs on Saturday. I replied to Matt at the time saying, well, one of those was only came about after he initially laid it straight to a Rotherham player who then miscontrolled it. So he sort of jabbed it into, think it was Kayembe from memory, but I can't remember. That was in the first half. Can't remember the other one. He essentially scored two goals, but basically did nothing else, did he?
In six passes, three accurate. 13 touches.
Go. I've got five passes accurate from seven. How weird. So who's collecting? Whose data's right?
I guess interpreting a Milita Rajovic pass is not the
yeah,
thing.
That's true.
But yeah, he didn't do much else. And, you know, the thing is, there's going to be this argument, isn't there? You know, if they're scoring goals, then that's what you need them for. But then, you know, on the other hand, in a different sort of game, are you losing offensive output because you're not bringing others into play to score goals? It's going to be a constant conversation around him. But, you know, as long as he is, then he's making an argument for himself. Because if he didn't score two goals and you look at that performance, you think, you know, let's just say he had two shots instead of two goals. It's two shots, three passes, accurate, if that is the correct number, and then 13 touches. It's really a non-existent performance, especially in the game you win 5-0. You'd expect a lot more dominance in that time, and you wouldn't think that you're getting your striker involved so little. I mean, looking at the passing network right now, and Rajovic is a tiny dot on the map. You know, he's not really involved, obviously, in many ways at all. So it's a difficult one, but he's a bit of an enigma in that sense.
It certainly is.
Six goals so far. How many do you think he'll get this season?
Well, if he's to play the majority of the games?
Currently, he's one in two, isn't he? More or less. 13 appearances, six goals. Mm. I mean, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, he could hit double figures, certainly, couldn't he? I think that's fair to say. I think that's almost somewhat conservative, you know, that he could hit double figures. And yeah, I mean, look, he's got the potential to do so. I think the argument's going to be, do we need that production from other parts of his game as the season goes on? You know, if those goals don't come, then we've maybe got a different player in our hands, which, yeah, I don't know. What do you think? What's your prediction on Milita?
I don't know, maybe 15, maybe more.
Yeah, you reckon that?
Goals this season. I think for a guy that we signed for, what, in the region of 1 million to 2 million, that's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is if he can. I think when I look at Rajovic, I look at a player that I think is a little bit out of his depth in terms of his all-round game. I think he gets swamped and gets a little bit lost. And obviously we see that in the numbers too, in terms of his involvement, but he can finish. And whilst other areas of his game might not be up to the standard, if his finishing is consistent, his conversion rate is good, it's hard to look past it.
He's somebody that you can flip, I think, at the end of the season. And I wouldn't be that unhappy if he was to be sold. But I think that this season he's proving his worth already.
I think that says it all, in that you've made two statements in a couple of seconds, Matt, both of which I agree with. And one of those was he could possibly get 15 goals, probably could. And the other is, I wouldn't be unhappy if he was sold. And I think that just says everything about him, doesn't it? That 15-goal striker, and we're all a bit like, the best thing that could happen is that he gets 15 goals plus and someone's stupid enough to pay decent money for him and we make a profit and replace him with someone that's more of an all-round forward. Because, yeah, I agree, he doesn't look particularly comfortable at any point at the moment. And this is the thing with Bio, although he's, Jordan, I think you said it earlier, Ravic a bit more clinical, I think he is. Bio's all-round game, I think, is a much better fit for us right now, and certainly in terms of what Ismail's trying to do. So, yeah, it's the kind of thing about modern football where just scoring goals isn't enough for a striker, just stopping goals isn't enough for a goalkeeper. You've got more is expected in this day and age.
Brazovic feels to me like someone who could really make a good living in League One or League Two, but the Championship is perhaps a step up for him that he can't quite make.
Yeah, and it is early for him, so you'll give him some benefit of the doubt, obviously. I think that, as I said, I think that the performances or kind of his ability has looked a little bit out below the standard required. You know, he's 24 years old, he'll be 25 next season. He's young, sure, but he's also... You know, we should be seeing some improvements soon, I'd say.
I'd say it's old enough for us to know what his game is and that it's not probably going to change much.
No, right. And it might get a little bit more refined. Like, it doesn't have to be, again, it doesn't have to be perfect if he's scoring goals, but you have to be the correct team to play him. And are we a team that's consistently able to create a high amount of decent quality chances? Historically, we're inconsistent at that. And oftentimes, you know, when I think of a Watford team in recent years and I think of our forwards, I think of, you know, whilst we have had the Championship years of Deeney and Ighalo and so on, Vidras and so on, a lot of that time has been spent with strikers that are there to spread the goals around and you know, develop more of a high-scoring team with a variety of positions. You know, we don't just rely on one striker as much as we used to. I don't, and even those players had that ability to bring others in. So you have to be a very specific type. And I think what he does suit is he would suit a team that is creating consistent high value, high quality, and high volume chances. You know, perhaps a substitute option is going to be something he finds himself as. And in the meantime, he'll be starting for us until those goals dry up a little bit.
Any more questions, Tom?
I believe there was one more. Yes, final one from @easymark2010. Building something meaningful in the left-back position. Lewis has not impressed and is not a long-term option there. So what should we be doing there? Keep up the quality analysis and train sound effects. I thought Lewis had probably one of his better games at the weekend and has had a couple of his better games now, but probably isn't going to be the long-term answer. What do we think?
Is he definitely not going to be a long-term answer, though?
I don't know. I'd kind of expect Newcastle to want a few mil for him even still, right?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. I think if you're gonna pull a player like Lewis away from Newcastle, now's probably a good time. Has he got 1 year left in his contract after this? Maybe two. I'm not sure what the fee would demand, but if performance is good, you know, you never know. Is what I'm trying to say. He might be an option they're looking at, but he might not be. But what I will say, the performances have been much better. We're not spending so much time looking at his throw-ins as much as we were previously. That was kind of the main impact he was having in the game for a while, was the fortune he had in. Although he did get caught up in a foul throw, didn't he, in one of the last games?
I was going to say, every single one is still a foul throw.
Yeah. But again, he was important to that left-hand side, as was Kone and as was Sema. He was looking much more the kind of tidy player that we thought he would be. He looks more comfortable in his position. He looks like he's starting to find a bit of a rhythm, I'd say.
With regards to Lewis, I've not been that impressed, really. I think he wasn't the player that I thought he'd be when he came in. Clearly, he's doing enough to keep Morris out of the team. I'm slightly disappointed about that because I thought Morris showed enough to still be in there, to be honest. But if Lewis can get back to the Lewis of Norwich and not the Lewis of Newcastle, then you know, I'm happy for him to stay there.
Hard to argue.
And that's all I have to say about that.
That's fine. That was the final question we had.
Great. Well, we finished this run of six games prior to the international break with 12 points. Is that firstly, a good return in points. And secondly, is that the progress and the performances that we've seen from this little period since the last international break to show that we are improving since that period?
I think it's good return points-wise, yes. I think as we said on the pod last week, I think I still have concerns and, you know, kind of as outlined today, concerns about the kind of actually how we performed over the course of 90 minutes against one of the division's poorest teams. But I think there's some things that are trending in the right direction, at least in terms of being a bit more solid, in terms of finding ways to score goals a bit more regularly. So I feel more positive than I did, you know, at the start of this run. Certainly that will all change very quickly if we get humped at Leicester after the international break.
Yeah, I think we're a team that's more likely to pick up points and win games and see games out than the team we saw in the first five games of the season. But I think I had more hope for the projection of that team we saw in the first five games of the season. So I think we're more of a team that can produce and perform and get results now. But what I would like to see is some reintroduction of some of the elements that made us a little bit more positive in the first few games, and see if we can maybe bring the two together a little bit more. I think they're kind of, you know, polar opposites right now in some regards. So we're maybe starting to see some of that. And obviously, you know, the record has been improving, and we do look in a much better position in large parts. And, you know, a lot of that is down to our solidity and ability to be a little bit more robust. So definitely positive in regards to that kind of recent five game block as a whole.
Okay, cool. Good stuff. Predictions for Leicester? What do you think?
3-0 loss.
I'm going to be positive. I'm going to say 1-1.
1-1. Yeah. Nice one. I'll go for a 1-0 win. Why not? There could happen. Never know. Right, that'll do us then for this week. Thank you very much for the questions that we got in. It's always good to take those questions, and it just makes the show feel a bit more integrated with the audience, which is really nice. Speaking of which, I just wanted to thank some of the people that make this possible. Hanson Ho, Mark Sheehan, Matthew, Nick Lansing, Michael Abrams, Steve Brown, and Matt B as well. Thank you very much for your support. And thank you to everyone as well that's in the past has given us a review on iTunes. If you haven't done so, but you're thinking, oh, I'd like to do that, you can go along to iTunes, scroll down to the bottom underneath the Watford Buzz podcast and give us a rating out of 5 and tell us a little bit of thing about what you like about the show or what you don't like. We take feedback in equal measure, and just because it's bad doesn't mean that we can't take it and improve and move forward, because, you know, we want to be like Watford and steadily improve rather than Rotherham and sack our manager and feel awful. Is that a good comparison?
Hard to argue with that.
Good stuff. All right then. Well, we'll be back after the Leicester game, hopefully talking about another positive day. But if we don't, you can always repeat this one and pretend that we're winning 5-0 every week, because it might not happen again this season. So enjoy this one. And maybe skip out next week. Who knows? We've been the Watford Buzz podcast. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Selling a little? Or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.